Welcome to Schoolin' Around, a podcast hosted by Branching Minds, featuring prominent leaders, subject matter experts, and thought innovators with their perspectives on the current challenges facing K-12 education. I am your host, Larissa Napolitan, a former teacher, instructional coach, and a member of the Branching Minds team, here to lead conversations and to shine a light on phenomenal educators and those that are on a mission to transform our schools and the lives of students. I am thrilled to announce our 2025 virtual MTSS Summit happening this December. This two-day event is all about MTSS innovation with intention, where we will dive into bold ideas and practical strategies to ensure every student is supported and every educator is equipped to succeed. Join a international community of educators and leaders to explore how intentionality and innovation can drive meaningful change in MTSS implementation. You won't want to miss this incredible opportunity to connect and grow. Change is never easy, especially in the field of education. Every new initiative seems to come with countless obstacles that make implementation challenging. Gaining stakeholder buy-in is just one piece of the puzzle. Unfortunately, change management in education is often misunderstood, and today we'll be discussing the myths and misconceptions that may be hindering the progress. So I'm excited to welcome Dr. Whitley Dozier, a value member of our Branching Minds team who works closely with districts every day to drive meaningful change. Welcome, Whitley. So glad to have you here.
Thanks, Larissa. Thanks for inviting me. Excited for today's topic.
Well, and I know you have this is what you studied to get your doctorate, organizational leadership. And so this is definitely a passionate topic for you. So first of all, let's just begin by defining change management. It's one of those things that I hear and I'm like, oh, that sounds super, you know, that's what the corporate-y kind of, that's what it sounds like to me in my mind. So it seems straightforward, like managing change, but maybe clarify the meaning for our audience.
Sure. I think change management has kind of like three components. So change management has to be people focused. It's about preparing, equipping, supporting people to adopt that big C, whatever that big change is for an organization. But it's also process driven. So change management utilizes lots of frameworks, tools, and strategies to help plan, communicate, and train, also reinforce new ways of working. John Cotter, it has an 8-step change model. That's one that's usually leveraged kind of in all sectors, but especially in education. There's kind of a framework to help centralize what steps are needed to make change happen. And then third is outcome. What are the outcomes? So change management really ensures that change sticks so that the organization and the people kind of see the benefits of the initiative. So people-focused, process-driven, outcome-oriented.
Awesome. Well, hopefully that, and for many of our listeners, that probably is all things that they understand of maybe working together with or working with their districts on. So we're going to talk about some of those misconceptions around change management. And one of them being just like, why do you think so many people maybe just think that change in education is just about that email that's sent of like, hey, this is the new thing that we're doing, or just having a meeting to say, hey, we're changing up the way that we're doing this stuff. Like, what's missing in that sort of misconception?
I love this question so much because when I first transitioned out of the classroom and I was a school-wide leader, I got an award for being the email champion. Like, I was sending out emails all the time. People are like, how do you send out 10 emails to multiple grade levels in like a 4-hour day? But I think for people, especially in education, they think kind of that emails and meetings equals change because it's the visibility part, right? Surface level. Emails and meetings are most visible. You could put it on a checklist. You can check it off. And you can kind of use that as a reference for something that we're doing, right? And then I think in education, we're also battled with time. So sometimes leaders have to juggle like caseloads, workloads, meetings, so that quick communication feels like the only feasible approach. But
yeah,
there's a lot missing from that, right?
Exactly. Well, and I think that I think about it and, you know, it's that tactical piece. It's one thing to say in a meeting, hey, this is something we're changing, but the communication part it's a piece of how things happen. It shouldn't just be about an email or just about a meeting. It should be about continually communicating your change. It's not just that one-time thing and that the leader is doing. And in that, we often think that we overestimate the power of the leader. Like, it's the job of the leader
to make sure that change is happening. So I always felt that pressure to, I was the one sending out emails to make sure that if we adopted a new program, oh, we're using it. We're, so the communication, the training about it, like I felt that pressure. And if I wasn't there, it wasn't going to happen. So why isn't a strong leader enough to make change happen?
Yeah, I think I go back to like your example, right? Of an email is typically one way. You're documenting something and you're getting it out and you're using it as a reference. But what's missing kind of from that like email to meeting piece, in my opinion, is that two-way communication, right? Change is not just telling. It's also listening, creating opportunities for questions and feedback and having that co-creation to kind of help with that buy-in. I think once you have that dialogue, kind of like going two ways as a leader to a teacher or a PLC meeting, there's also a need to kind of create a shared vision and urgency, right? So staff needing to understand not just what the change is, but why it matters, how it connects to student outcomes and how families kind of are involved. Everyone kind of has a stake in creating that shared goal. So I think when those pieces are, weaved into that change management rollout, there's opportunities for training and support around that, coaching. If the leader is kind of championing this change, they should be modeling kind of like the new behaviors or the processes that they're expecting to kind of, take place with their school setting. There's that need for reinforcement, right? Ongoing, celebrating the wins, sharing the data. How are we doing with progress? Finding those educators who are doing that thing very well, recognizing them for making the effort. All of those can help center the work and help other people to kind of create that culture and emotion to move towards that change. I think change can be disruptive. Change disrupts routines, ideas, beliefs, right? And sometimes addressing that fear or even fatigue or skepticism can help with a better rollout for that new initiative.
Yeah. And a strong leader is a piece of that. Like it's good to have a strong leader that's spearheading that work. But if it's just about that one person, change really doesn't happen. It may just be like something that happens while that leader is there. But when they leave, if things go back to the way they were, then change really didn't happen. So that idea that, you know, all the work that goes into changing the beliefs and the practices of the people, in order to make it stick, it can't just be about that one person. I think often we talk about that with MTSS, right? It has to last beyond that one person that's doing the work. And it shouldn't just be about one person, but about a team of people building it into your district policies, building a handbook. Like all of those things help make it stick. Not just about one person that sort of believes it. I mean, you need the champions, you need the people that are doing that part, but you have to, in order to make it stick, it can't just be about that one person.
Absolutely. And once it's memorialized, it's part of the culture, you know?
Oh, I love the word memorialized. That's a great word.
Yes. Like we did this big thing. How can we make sure that it's like embedded into the culture? And I think in education, we think about quantitative data, right? What are the metrics? Are we making growth for student achievement? But that qualitative piece, like what is the culture? What does it feel like? Do we tackle hard things together? Have we made it through tough things together? I think pandemic teaching is a kind of a testament of that. All the things that we had to adapt to. I know if you were teaching maybe in elementary, you had a rolling ABC class kind of rolling in at different days. Like a lot of change was happening at one time and it felt scary. But if you have a leader who can help to center that work and create capacity for people to kind of have some shared ownership. And at the end of the day, we're here to all make sure that kids are growing and doing great things in schools. So keeping that at the forefront is really important. But change happens through people, not just through directives.
I love that. Change happens through people, not just directives. And you're right, because people are the ones who actually are doing the work, building the relationships to help change those beliefs, providing resources, having those difficult conversations with people about why we're doing something, building out the rationale behind it, helping people jump on board. You know, because I think sometimes we think about changes, it's a one and done. We've switched to a different system. So now we're doing it this way. But there is that reality of you got to keep going. You can't just, like we talked about in the beginning, you can't just have that meeting and send that email and that's the change that's happened. You know, what's the reality of keeping momentum after the initial rollout? What do you think what are the pieces that really help keep things going?
Yeah. So outside of like that one and done notion, the reality of maintaining the momentum is I feel like the space of recognizing implementation is a phase, not an event, right? You might have that off PD meeting and you're like, yay, we did this great thing. We had cookies at the thing. We signed off on it. We know that this is our goal for the year. And then we never kind of visit or kind of reinforce that into ongoing meetings. So I really feel like adoption often takes place like weeks or sometimes months after that kind of initial kind of kickoff. And then there should be opportunities for coaching and an embedded PD to help support kind of the day-to-day work. And that could look like, you know, regular PLC meetings, coaching cycles, ongoing communication and feedback loops are always important. Teachers always want to know what's happening, right? And they always, I feel like, have something to share. And I feel like as leaders, sometimes we can be a little bit fearful of the candid feedback we get from educators. I feel like if something is happening, that's also data, right? We need to know if something's happening so we can course correct or change kind of what's not working and go off the script if we need to. If we need to make a shift, being open and willing to kind of making those changes so that we're supporting the people through that big movement. Celebrating and publicizing wins. I think there's a lot of benefits to kind of keeping that motivation high and celebrating teachers doing great things and that work. But that overall monitoring, knowing kind of what's happening and empowering teachers should help to normalize the change culturally so mm-hmm. that beliefs and things of that sort are being memorialized into the culture.
Yeah, I think that that's part of it is that it's a continuous process. I think anytime you make a big change, you know, I could use an example of if I've changed something about my health or I started working out or I become more active in the gym. Like there's a continual process. Anybody who does that, they can have to continue to work out. They're just like, oh, now I'm getting shape. I'm done. I'm done working out of the gym. No, there's like this process of you're constantly getting better. You're constantly figuring out the implementation. It's the continuous improvement part of say with MTSS is like, there's always, because you're always getting new groups of students. There's always going to be something else. The encounters, there's turnover, there's people to train, coaching that happens. I think coaching is a really good way to kind of think about it. You know, and that kind of leads into that idea that with change management, you're dealing with resistant people. I think that's a good myth to talk about with change management is like people are resistant to change. Do you think it's always resistance or do you think there's something else that goes on?
I think it's always something else. Change feels risky sometimes. Like it can threaten like beliefs, routines, instructional practices, like even from like a SEL behavior or kind of like PDIS component, relationships, right? Between teachers and students and how they feel about school. I also think too in education, there's overload. And I think we mentioned fatigue earlier too. Like there's so many initiatives that teachers are having to kind of juggle. And adding one more change can sometimes feel impossible to handle, you know?
Yeah.
Sometimes it's all attributed to lack of clarity of purpose. If teachers don't understand why the change matters or how it connects, there might be just a natural kind of reaction to resist. Like, I need to know more. I'm not fully bought in yet. I also, when I was in the school, I had a lot of educators who were veterans. And a lot of them were like, well, I've been around long enough. Due to my past experiences, I know sometimes initiatives fail. So I'm going to be a little bit resistant to, you know, adopting to this new product. I'm a little skeptical because they may have had a bad experience in the past. When I was in the classroom for reading specifically on the MTSS side, we were moving from balanced reading approach, the less explicit way to teach kind of reading to like the science of reading, which is very explicit. Mm-hmm. Has a very, very significant overhaul of how the curriculum is written in some cases for some schools. So some teachers were like, well, we already did science of reading like 20 years ago. I want to teach the sight words. I want to drill all these letters and letter sounds without doing the science of reading part. So I think knowing your educators and where they are within their experiences in teaching and kind of honoring that can help to create a space to kind of demystify, you know, the risky part of shifting to change. Sometimes there's just inefficient support or resources. So resistance shows up when teachers are not given enough training or time or having opportunities for coaching so that they can feel capable of being successful with it.
I think, because I think it's not just about resistance of I don't want to change or I don't want change to happen. You know, I don't think anyone would ever say that because they do believe that people can change, things can change because they're in education, they're teaching students, they believe they're growing, right?
Right.
So I don't ever think it's that way. I do think, there's lots of other factors that consider It's not necessarily resistance, but it's like, it has to do with like education, understanding. It probably has to do with a level of overwhelm. I think that's a huge part of when people feel like pushback on change, is that I'm already doing a lot of things and now you're asking me to do another thing. And so in order to, for many leaders, approaching your staff with that idea of what is already on their plate and how do I help them understand that this either alleviates things on their plate or this helps them, or what can I take off their plate if I want this to happen? So I feel like change management, you really have to look into how is this going to affect the people and affect their day-to-day. Like, I think oftentimes I remember sitting in the seat of a teacher of going, do they not even understand what we're doing every day? Do they think that we don't care? Just that idea of when a leader is out of the classroom, oftentimes they may forget what it's like the day-to-day. You know, I can think of many examples. Oh, we're going to move to this new LMS and you need to be doing your lessons online. The students need to be accessing this. Well, that sounds great and good, but like that adds so much work to my day. And to train students how to log in. I mean, you're dealing with middle schoolers, you know, chaos. And so it's like, it transforms how I teach. And so it should in some way, but I think really pushing people too fast, too far.
Yes.
Or too far, too fast, it can make it harder in the long run. So really having to understand the scope of what you're doing, the scope and sequence really of the work is really essential. And so I admire many leaders that I talk to on this podcast and, you know, districts that we partner with just about, hey, I know that they've got a lot going on. So we're just going to do this one part of implementation mm-hmm. this year. We're going to start with this.
Yes.
And then we're going to build. And so really taking consideration of what can they handle, what is the most important, what's the most urgent, and not asking them to do more with less time. And really taking that, I think those are really part. And that helps kind of, you're right, demystify the work of what change is happening.
Yeah, labeling teachers as like resistant to change can kind of seem easy for a leader to kind of say, but it like oversimplifies the reality, you know? If you're a true leader, you may see hesitation as a signal to listen, support, and like help to co-create those initiatives and that vision, not just as an obstacle to kind of like push through, you know?
Yeah. And I think you said it earlier, like there's a spectrum of it, right? Some people may start back here and some people start further ahead. You're early adopters of things. And so really having grace for people that are every place on the spectrum.
Yes.
And saying, how do I help you move and grow? I think about those teachers when, you know, adopting technology is a great example. Many of them, it's like even just to do things through email, or, you know, putting your grades in online. Maybe they did all of their other grades in a paper grade book and then they eventually put them in. That's the first step, right? That's step one. Okay. And then we slowly move to like, hey, you don't even need to keep a paper. But I just feel like that's where just trying to work with the teachers and learning to coach them through some of their resistance or through some of their barriers to adopting something or implementing a new change. But I think you're right. It's just like the people part of the work is so essential. And it does take a leader that really considers those things instead of just dismisses them as, oh, you just are resistant to change and you don't want good things for students.
Sure. I was a MTSS coach for our school and I would go to district meetings and some other schools and their coordinators would say, we have an MTSS problem here. And I'm like, what does that mean? What does an MTSS problem mean? Does that mean the people aren't trained? Does that mean like processes aren't set up? Like what does it mean? Let's uncover kind of like what the root cause is. And to your point about like being lazy, that could be like the easy way to say it or frame it, but there's so many undertones to what that actually feels like when you're in that space and why it feels so challenging or why people are so hesitant, you know, more listening can happen.
I think that anyone probably listening, we've maybe hit on some pain points that you're experiencing with your MTSS implementation or just any kind of initiative that you're implementing. So we hope that this is encouraging or just even thought provoking of like, is there something that we could be doing? How do we resist some of this? Whitley, thanks for, there's so much more that we could talk about in this. This is, you know, just diving into the aspects of change management and how districts are doing it. And so thank you so much for being here just to dive a little bit into some of the myths.
Thank you so much for the topic. And I'm here to encourage any leader, regardless if you're the district seat, the school level seat, the grade level chair seat, see change as a vehicle to knowing your people, the adults in which you are leading, and finding ways to create these really, really exciting and great milestones that can take place through change. And it, like you said, small counts. Starting small really does count. Change management sometimes takes 3 years. I always say MTSS, if you start with developing, you could be optimizing, you know, you could be doing all things really, really well by year three. So understanding that the management process involves steps and, you know, those small steps and those celebrations should be something that's acknowledged with the people you're working with.
Yeah. Well, thank you so much. I hope you have a great day and we'll talk soon.
Thank you, Larissa.
Thanks for listening to Schoolin' Around, a podcast hosted by Branchy Minds. Go ahead and subscribe to our feed wherever you listen to podcasts. And don't forget, if you are enjoying our content, would you do us a favor and rate and review our podcasts on iTunes? This helps others find our podcasts and lets us know how much you love what we're creating. Branchy Minds is an educational technology company using learning sciences and technology to help districts effectively personalize learning through MTSS. To learn more about us, check out our website, branchyminds.com, or follow us on Twitter, Facebook, or LinkedIn at Branchy Minds.